From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Take a deep breath right now. Do you notice anything different?
That a lot of people kept telling me I was right in the last hour?
No.
Oh, my bad.
The air is clearer.
Oh.
Our air quality is better. I think that little bit of teeny bits of rain and, I don't know, we got to find out from Nick Allard what it is that's happening, but we had mostly good air quality in most of the state, which hasn't happened in a bit.
I tell you what, I need this heat to stay away because I just got that utilities bill yesterday.
Oh, boy.
I might have to start sleeping outside when it gets hot.
Well, your wish is going to come because over the weekend, you know, it is going to be in the lower 70s and there will be a chance of rain.
Yeah, very true. Hey, coming up at 11:30, we're going to talk about drip pricing. Those annoying fees that you don't know about until it's too late, and service fees that have made you, or at least made me, annoyed about tipping. We get into that at 11:30, but right now it is time for Agree to Disagree, brought to you by Johnny Tsunami.
One of these days, we just gotta take off the gloves and just really go at it.
I want to talk about something that I know a lot of you listening are going through right now, and that is being a primary or secondary caregiver for someone in your family. Vox had a really interesting piece taking a look at this issue. There are 48 million people in our country that provide unpaid care to their loved ones, and they propose giving them help. So I'm going to ask you in a second whether the government should pay people to take care of their family. But let me give you a little bit of background. So if you are a middle-aged adult who's not currently a caregiver, one in six of you right now will become a caregiver within the next 2 years. Over 60% of unpaid caregivers are women. Over 60% have no paid help. 20% provide care for more than 40 hours per week, and the average person provides 4.5 years of care. So, Ursula, I'm going to ask you again. Should the government pay people to take care of their relatives? Should there be financial assistance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for any of you who have elderly parents right now, you know what I'm talking about. The reality is people are living longer. And it is hard. Well, you know what's really hard, especially during COVID, for a lot of these assisted living facilities and nursing homes, for them to find help because the pay is so low. And for many of the elderly, they don't want to go into those nursing homes. And so the ideal thing would be to be able to age in place. But to do that, you often need help. And to get that kind of help, if you were going to pay out of pocket, you better figure that it's going to cost the equivalent of your mortgage eventually, because it is expensive to have in-home help if you don't have government help. And many people do have to give up their jobs to be able to care for an elderly person. I think it would eventually cost the government more to have to do these other programs where people are 100% reliant on it instead of having family members. But you can't take, especially women, take them out of the workplace so that they can be the caregivers for their parents or their in-laws, as the case may be. Absolutely, I think it would be a good investment.
Well, I'm on the same page with you. I know this is Agree to Disagree, but I am definitely on the same page with agreeing that caregivers should be able to receive money from the government, and no doubt about it, being able to take someone out of the workforce would be devastating, especially when they have to stay home. And Chef, I just want to let you know that those numbers you gave just absolutely spooked and they just scared me like crazy. Now, I'll just throw this question out there, and Chef, you can go ahead and answer. What happens, is there a difference if you're married as opposed to not being married? If something were to happen, middle-aged or whatever age, is there a difference when it comes to if the money follows you or not?
Well, here's how I understand it, is that if you are disabled, you can collect on Medicaid and collect basically the equivalent of Social Security payments. It's not a lot of money, but you cannot be married in order to collect that money. So, for example, if you have cerebral palsy, you can never get married if you want to have government benefits. You know, if you have maybe a Parkinson's that's debilitating you, and you're not married yet, then you can't rely on that money. So there's a lot of disabled people that are in a relationship that can't, you know, function like the rest of us because of those rules. And there are a lot of families, of course, that, Ursula, like you said, they have someone dropping out of the workforce, etc. How about this argument against it? Because there is a Credit for Caring Act in Congress right now, has not been approved. It would give eligible family caregivers like $5,000 a year to help pay for some care costs or at least reimburse them for some of their time.
$5,000?
It's not a lot of money.
It's not a lot of money.
The argument against this, of course, will be, well, it is your duty and obligation to take care of your family member. That is what humans have done throughout societies since the dawn of time. Why does that burden now fall on the government to take care of you for taking care of your own?
And I understand that argument. However, at some point, the government will either be taking care of the elderly or will be taking care of me if I have to take myself out and I can no longer pay my own rent, right? I mean, mm-hmm. In a perfect world, everyone would plan appropriately and have, you know, enough money and the proper planning. And I actually talk about this with Rajiv Nagayesh, the life planner that I work with. But that's not the case. So many people do end up in those retirement years without having that safety net. So and as someone who actually had to work through the process of getting Medicaid for a loved one. Mm-hmm. That's not easy. That requires a ton of time and work. And you have to do things to make sure that your family is eligible. So people don't realize this, but yes, we're living. 10,000 people will turn 65 today alone. The number of older adults in the U.S. will double over the next several decades. So this is only going to become a bigger problem, which is what it sounds like that Vox article was pointing out. This is not going to go away. It's going to become even more exacerbated. And should you be responsible? I mean, in a perfect world, I would just stop working and give full-time care.
Right.
But that's not a reality.
What if this stuff was tied to our health insurance and all of this stuff, you know? Like, I wish that some of this was tied into that, but we all know that our health insurance usually is tied into our work, and then when we're not working anymore, we don't have that health insurance, and then it's just I guys got to tell you, this topic right here takes me into a place where you realize how many of us don't have these protections out here. And how we don't face them until they're right there in front of us.
Absolutely. And I will just say that if you're waiting for Medicare and you think Medicare is going to take it, cover it all, it does not.
No.
So just FYI, I mean, there are a lot of things that are not covered and there's going to be holes in your coverage. That's a whole nother thing. But yes, there are lots of people my generation taking care of the elderly and their elderly loved ones, and it just puts an additional challenge to make ends meet.
Yeah, I think this is fascinating. It's a huge problem we're going to deal with as a society, and I want to have a lot more conversations about this. But for right now, hey, G, I don't even have a question for you. I just have a headline that's just cherry-picked out for you.
Let's hear it.
No particular reason whatsoever.
Let's hear it.
CNBC, 1 in 3 workers say that a return to the office has hurt their mental health. So there, Ursula. G.
Okay. Respond.
Oh, he want me to respond to this. Well, again, we talked about this. We have been talking about this for some time, especially since Simone Biles has come out and Naomi Osaka has come out. And that has forced us all to have conversations centered around mental health. So if they say 1 in 3 are having a hard time, with mental health challenges by going back to work, then it is what it is. You have to believe them.
Well, I want to point out that the headline was very selective because this was a June McKinsey survey of 1,600 people. And the same survey showed that another 1 in 3 workers said going back to an office had a positive impact on their mental health. I'm guessing the people who also should have been talked to are the people who've been going to the office who are happy to see those 1 in 3 who are also happy to be back in the office.
There's a glaring hole in there called Ursula.
So, of course, this could all change given the number of COVID cases and the Delta variant. But, I understand. I'm never going to make fun, as G said. I'm never going to doubt when someone says, you know, it is. So what's causing the mental health stress? The fear of getting sick? Just the fear of the having to deal with annoying coworkers?
I'm sure that too. And this doesn't, by the way, this does not fall into my category, but this falls into, how about the parents out there who have young kids who have to figure out and help when it comes to watching their kids or school or daycare and things like that? That's a real big stress, after school care and all of those things. So
that survey confirms that, G. 44% of the parents in the say that going back to the workplace negatively impacted their mental health. That was compared with 27% of the people without kids.
Right.
I just wonder if there's a certain subset, though. I don't want to downplay mental health issues, but in this context, I wonder how many people are bummed out, just bummed out, because like life was better, right? And it's either like I'm really upset about having to go back in, or maybe there's a toxic workplace to begin with. G, how do you feel on Fridays when you come in, though, buddy?
That I get less done.
You are in the best mood. Don't even come at me with that.
No. It feels, no, I'm going to tell you what it feels like. It feels like show and tell when you were a kid, when I come to work on Fridays. I love coming in. It's so fun. I also love not coming in. And what I mean by that is this. I'm able to do, a lot of times there's all the studies and like, oh, they sold it. You don't do as much for work, or you do less or more for work. How about what you do for yourself? And the amount of time that I save just in a day is about 3 hours. That's just driving. Right? That's just driving. What do I get done with those 3 hours in my day? I actually get a lot done every single day, more so than I used to. Now, in all fairness, I don't have practices to drive to anymore. And my evenings are definitely very easy because I don't have kids here really anymore. But at the same time, I want to say, Ursula, I love coming in on Fresh Fridays.
So what you're saying is that you actually do have plenty of time to squeeze in those 3 hours because you're so unbusy now. Hey, I'm going to ask you to agree or disagree with a statement. And it's something that's been coming across the text line quite a bit in regards to our conversation about both unemployment and people choosing not to pay rent. Ursula, I'm going to start with you. Agree or disagree with the statement. People just don't know how to work hard anymore.
I hate blanket statements. So I think some people don't understand. Yes, I would agree. Some people don't, but people don't just in general. No, I see young people who are working extremely hard, harder than I ever worked when I was that age. And they're also working smarter. But are there people like the listener who texted us, or a friend of mine who said that her son is sitting it out right now, even though he's perfectly healthy and could work because he's making more and he can just enjoy his summer? Yeah, there's definitely some of that. But I'm not willing to cast aspersions to an entire generation.
Well, that's Ursula, you played that very safe. You played that very safe. Let me go ahead and say it. No. Today's generation does not work harder than the previous. There's a lot of folks that are flat out lazy. You heard what I said. It's a lot of folks that just don't get it. Oh, I just worked an 8-hour shift. I don't know if I'll be able to go. This is a lot of folks that there's some entitlement out there. Maybe you come from rich folks. Mommy and daddy had a lot of money, or you were able to get some real estate money from your grandparents that bought that home in the 50s. Because, you know, some folks weren't able to buy homes in the 50s, so they had to make do. But anyways. Yes, this generation right here, there's a whole bunch of folks that don't work hard. Oh my goodness, I have 125 emails that are unread. Come on. Yeah, I said it. You send your hate mail all you want to.
How many emails do you have unread?
He has more than 125 hate mails.
About $41,000. About 41,000. Hey, wait a minute. I have 41,000, and how many times have you heard me say, oh my goodness, I have all these emails to return?
Love, what did you just start talking, just the last headline that we discussed on Agree to Disagree, you talked about how hard you're working at home, how, oh my God, the 3 hours that you would have to do to drive in, I can't get things done. Excuse me.
Hey,
my buns have been in here every single day.
Oh my goodness, Ursula, that commute's rough. Rawr. Okay. Anyways, I'm just saying what is. So people want to go ahead and justify it. You can say it how you want to. The question is today's generation? How did you phrase that, Chef?
People just don't know how to work hard anymore.
Let me say it. People don't know how to work hard anymore. That's right. A lot of people want a whole lot of something for very little.
Can I just ask you, though, this, in all honesty, because I see, too, that people are texting, yeah, I agree, 100%, 1,000%, gee, everyone's lazy nowadays. Do you see where there's a problem with making those blanket statements? It's, to me, it grates me like everyone on the left and everyone on the right.
But see, I agree with
that. Wait. Oh, it does? It's the same thing?
Yes.
Because let me just say this. I say this in my own house. I won't even allow my kids to sleep in past 9 o'clock on the weekends. What are you guys talking about? This is what I do. You guys know. Hey, in my household, you guys have heard me talk to my kids before, unfortunately. You know how I am. I believe in hard work. You got to move. Ain't no sitting around playing video games all day on a Saturday and Sunday. You better go get some business.
And I don't disagree with you, but I just don't think that, and from what I have seen, there are a lot of people who understand hard work.
Last two quick points. Worker productivity has skyrocketed, so I think people are working very hard. But we're not, like, busting fields and, like, lifting rocks and clearing timber these days. So in that sense, yeah, not working as hard.
Yeah, I guess I'm not working on the farm either. Okay, still ahead. We're going to be talking about those annoying fees. I bought some tickets to a concert coming up. I think
Service
it's still
fee.
Coming up. Oh, my gosh, yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about that coming up next. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show. It's 11:34. It is the G and Ursula Show. Sorry, G, didn't see you.
That's my bad.
Thank you for hanging out with us. This hour of our show is brought to you by Guardian Operations. And you said something to us last night, and you said, this is just so annoying. And it has to do with something called drip pricing.
Yeah. Lately, when I tip, I have resentment.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
You're normally an excellent tipper.
And even though I have resentment, I said that wrong.
No, you said
I still am a good tipper. My resentment has nothing to do with the server, has nothing to do with the service. It is altogether with just tipping. Let me just go into this. Right now, this problem is larger than just tipping, obviously. Why do we not pay sticker price for anything in this country? And it's called drip pricing. an initial sticker price meant to lure you in and commit to a purchase. Then here comes all of the fees. Ursula, I would love for you to tell the concert, and then after that, I'll tell you about these new, quote, resort fees. You guys have been going to hotels lately over the last 2 years, and all of a sudden, the resort fees are now in the game when you go to Vegas. Ursula, you want to tell us?
Wait a minute. As a Vegas goer, resort fees have been around. They're just getting higher and higher.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, and then as far as the concert, so yeah, I got tickets, a bunch of tickets for Chicago at Chateau Saint Michel. I'm hoping it still happens. It's so far so good. But in any case, I had to go because I waited too long. I couldn't go through the venue. I had to go through one of these other ticket sellers. And so a ticket that was supposed to be like $95 ends up being $140 each or $130 each. I'm thinking, wait. Did I put too many tickets down? No, it was all these convenience fees, service fees, blah, blah fee. Why don't you? And I know that there is a push. The Federal Trade Commission is looking into this. Basically, why don't you just give it here's your total price. This is what you are going to pay after all the fees are said and done. But the thing that is now hitting restaurants more and more frequently is this service fee that they automatically add. Have you ever gotten a bill and then you just automatically add a tip and realize, man, that bill was more expensive than I thought? Oh, wait. You put a tip on top of the service fee, which is 15%.
The automatic gratuity that they put on there, right? I don't like it when they do that. I really don't like when they just automatically put that on there. But I want to go back a little bit to the tipping. And here's my problem right now, and I'm going to bring it home. First of all, the practice of tipping, it's kind of, we know that it started in Europe. We do know that in the 17th century. But then the practice of tipping here in the United States largely was due to, after the Civil War, formerly enslaved people were able to find work in the food service and later on as railroad porters. And a lot of their money, they weren't getting paid, but they had to get a job. So a lot of their money relied on tips. That's how they made their money. Like, oh, here, thank you. And that was their money. So here I am present day. Now, let's say this server, man, woman, doesn't matter. If they can't work, if they aren't able to work because daycare or their kids or something like that, then they are going to be missing out on that day or two or 5 days of tips. What I'm saying is I want to do away with tips. Let's just pay servers. Just pay them good money. Pay them. And then when we come to a restaurant, we pay for whatever the food costs. So if that means like, okay, well, gee, that means the food is going to go, the price is going to go up. Okay, understandably so. Fine. But I don't, this whole hidden thing of going to restaurants and you get your service, you get your food, and then afterwards you have to pay for, I want all of the service in there. I want the entire price in there. And then also I feel good knowing that that server or servers in this industry are consistently getting paid their fair shake, even if they can't work that day because maybe they got to take care of a sick child or a sick parent or a loved one. Mm. That's where my resentment for tipping is coming from. Has nothing to do with the server because the service is great. I'm going to tip you great.
So, first of all, thank you for the history of tipping, because I didn't know all that until today. Secondly, on the service charge, I understand that some restaurants are saying, well, we're putting that in there to make sure that our employees don't get stiffed and people in the back can also get some compensation additionally and share in some of the tipping, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. However, make it real obvious and then I don't want to feel guilty if I'm only going to add a couple more dollars to what you have presented me as the bill because it's already been charged. Maybe it's just me, but I always feel like, oh, my God, now I'm going to look like a cheapskate just putting a couple of dollars in there. What if I wanted to? I would never say get rid of tipping because I'm going to guess most people, I think we should pay better and then also keep tipping there as an additional incentive and an additional possibility for people in the service industries, which generally don't pay much, to get I mean, most people in those industries make more in tips than they do in their hourly.
And so I disagree with
And I wouldn't want to take that away. Well, let's text us at 98973.
Well, now, real quick, and I want to hear from Chef. Chef, I know you've been in this industry, but real quick, why? Why should someone be making more in tips than they make with their regular pay? And the problem with that is sometimes that server has no control. What if the food is backed up? What if they're down someone, down a couple cooks in the back, and the food takes a long time, and then this person says, I'm going to shorten this person's tip because of how long it took to get the food? That wasn't the server's fault. Chef, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, frankly, it's just a way of cost shifting, right? And hiding the actual price of what you're going to pay for something. So if you're in a state that, you know, mandates a $2.37 tipped wage, it's just a way for owners to staff up their restaurants at extremely high volumes, right? So you have one server for every three tables. They don't have to pay those people much, and they hope that the customers will take on the cost of their wage through the course of their own guilt. See, that is where I am stuck, G. I am tired of paying 30 cents out of every dollar on nearly everything I purchase, either just because I feel guilty enough to do so, or because the cost of everything is so hidden that I never know what I'm going to pay. It is insane in this country that we pay so... I can't... Aside from, like, grocery and most retail, what do you pay that's actually sticker price? Actually, not even groceries. There's tax on top.
Okay, we're getting a ton of emails and text messages from people who are in the service industry, including hairstylists. And one person says, never get rid of tipping because if it's off the books, if somebody drops $100, do you think that gets reported? It's cash.
And what happens during a pandemic when you need to rely on that income for your unemployment?
Which is why I said the base salary needs to be higher. The base salary needs to be higher, but I would not take away tips. I'm just, what I don't like is not making it obvious that there's that service fee in there or you know, these other fees that are tacked on. But I would absolutely keep tipping in there. Another person says, I just wouldn't work because I can make up to $60 an hour based on my tips, which there's no way that any business would be able to pay me that.
There's a lot of people that seem to think that I'm way off when it comes to this topic. But I'm going to ask this. During this pandemic, Ursula, Chef, did we not see a lot of people leave the restaurant industry because of what happened and them missing out on those tips?
Yes.
And they're scared to go back into it because not knowing what could happen in the future again? This is me more fighting for, I would love for servers to get more pay and not have to rely on the tips. And as far as the hairstylist, the best tip that a hairstylist can get, by the way, I do tip my barber. I want to say that. But the best tip that you can get is for that person to come back again and again and again and bring all their family and friends.
And
that's
give you
an amazing
30% tip too. That's a good tip.
Okay, coming up next, your text, your feedback. Ursula's Words to Live By, G and Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Wednesday to all of you. Before we get to the text, Ursula, my friend, question for you. You take the Subaru to a mechanic, and the mechanic fixes your car, goes above and beyond and fixes your car. And then you take yourself after to a stylist to do your hair, and the stylist does a great job and goes above and beyond on your hair. Mm-hmm. Which one do you tip?
I'm just going to be honest. The hairstylist.
Why don't we tip the mechanic?
Right. I don't know. That's just not something that I'm accustomed to. It's not something that I've done traditionally. I assume that mechanics make really good money. I don't know. That's a great question. I also don't. You told me I should be tipping movers. I should be, you know. You were telling me people I should be tipping that I haven't been tipping. And by the way, someone just called me out and said I am totally out of touch because I mentioned giving a 30% tip to a hairstylist. But just FYI, I get my hair done like once a year. So if I get a 30% tip.
That's very true. That's very true. That's true. Ursula does not go
I am not,
once a month.
Yeah, I'm not someone who is out of touch. And I for anyone who would think that way, I shared with you that I had to help a loved one get on Medicaid. You really think I'm out of touch with realities?
And somebody texts in and says, 253 says, don't tip the mechanic because he already factored in the tip in the price. Mm. Hello? Hello? All right. We had some fun. Let's get to your text, your feedback, and then we'll have Ursula's words to live by. Ursula.
Okay. And let's start with Spiffy's closing because they can't find workers. 425 says, hey, G, it sounds like you have an attitude towards people who run their own business. I run a landscape company, and I can't find people either. Do you have any solutions to get people to work? I pay big money, but it doesn't matter. People have to want to work.
Then text in, tell me what you're paying, and let me help you. Let me help you. As a matter of fact, come on my show. Come on our show, and we can talk about it, and I'll go ahead and promote your business. All right. 360 says, I work for a big garbage company, and we cannot find drivers right now. We start at $30 an hour. There you go. $30 an hour and have great retirement and great insurance. We can't even get anybody to walk through the door to ask if we're hiring. So I can only imagine what it would be like to find waitresses right now. Yo, if y'all paying $30 an hour, when Zion gets back from Columbus, I'm sending him up there.
Well, here we go. 425 says, my employees make around $30 plus an hour, and finding a good employee is difficult. Every day, even today, I need a spot filled, and I can't even get one of my 7 employees to cover it. Maybe get to know a few business owners so you can see what's going on.
I mean, I know a lot of business owners. Okay.
And I told you, I see that you are struggling to try to find people to work. I see it.
Yeah. Let's get the tipping. 253 says, my favorite restaurant has an automatic service charge on top of the high food prices. And with a tip, it's ridiculous. Unfortunately, I will no longer return there.
Eviction moratorium extended. 360 says, I had 2 homes that I was renting. Both tenants stopped paying rent 12 months ago. They had good jobs. They were both evicted in the last 2 months because I had to short sell both of those houses because I couldn't pay the mortgage. I lost both houses and $95,000 in rent. This is why I keep mentioning the landlords. The tenants had an extra $95,000 in income this year. They are presently living with family because there's nothing available to rent.
Wow.
Another one. My tenants owe over $20,000, goes to work, and offered $75 a month to repay the rent. Really? Over 20 years? Crazy.
Mm. All right, Ursula. Sorry, Chef. We got to get going. It's time for your words to live by, Ursula.
Just a reminder, this is a quote from Leo Buscaglia, who says, too often we underestimate the power of a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or even the smallest act of caring, all of which have the potential to turn a life around. Our words to live by are brought to you by ProClub.com, a club like no other.
Get a job, sir!
That's a good tip.
Thanks, Ursula.
Thank you.
Chef, appreciate your all hard work, man. Thanks for getting us all, getting me riled up like you always do every single day. And we'll do this again tomorrow, of course. We appreciate all of you guys for listening. Love you for that. And make sure you be good.
And coming up next on the Dory Monson Show, with all the problems in the city of Seattle, Dory says the city council spent nearly a half hour today doing something that he just can't understand. He'll explain that coming up on The Big League.